Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is a Force Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsack.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Jennifer Landa.
And we're here to discuss Star Wars like no other show. That's right. The Force Center School is in session.
Oh, man.
That sounded like a school marm, didn't it? No. I'm just,
Are we selling online courses?
We should. We should sell online Star Wars courses.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you this. I have thought about this. A friend of mine is in the administration of a local community college here in L.A., and I've thought about seeing if Force Center can teach Star Wars.
Absolutely. How to half-truth like Obi-Wan Kenobi.
That's right. Not saying we do it the only way, but we have a fun way. And I'm excited because today we are going to be diving into the redemption of Ben Solo, a.k.a. Kylo Ren, a.k.a. Luke's nephew. And that is a big topic, Joseph, we're going to get into. We have a lot to chew on.
Yeah, we've been wanting to talk about this one for a while. And Jennifer wisely recommended, let's wait and see what's in that trailer for episode 9. And it does change the conversation, I think.
It does. That was a good point. We were ready to go.
Yeah,
we were
like, I know.
Oh, man, we were all strapped up, ready. I don't know what that means.
You were. And Jennifer was like, gentlemen, I put forth this idea. This is what the Force Center meetings are. They're like British Parliament.
I like it.
Yeah, we're going to dive into that.
What is Jennifer proposing?
By the way, can we trademark that is a Force Center favorite line?
I think it's too late.
It's too late. Star Wars can be shared by everyone. Something we preach here. Except that line. That is a Force Center only line.
I know. I saw that making the rounds over online. I was like, Hey, wait a minute.
There was, I mean, was it the Mandalorian panel, Joseph?
Yes.
Yeah. The Mark Daniel, the MC, was going around. He had a bunch of fans up and was like, say your favorite quote from Star Wars. And someone goes, what is he proposing? And like awesome. Joseph looks at me and I look at like, yay.
It didn't get a great reaction in the room. No. So I think maybe it's people heard that and like, we need to get this line more popular.
It reminds me in 1997 when one of my favorite music artists, Sarah McLachlan, launched a Lilith Fair and people started discovering her. And I was like, no. That was my favorite Canadian chanteuse, not yours. I don't want to share her yet. You know,
what is Lilith Fair proposing?
Yep.
Oh, we're having a lot of fun here in Four Center, episode 165. And today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Four Center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, as always, we'll have our Force Center recommends a book we think you should try on us. We got Star Wars Adventures. It's a Game of Thrones week for me. Yep. Big stuff going on there, but Star Wars and just life in general still in our world.
Yeah, it's a pop culture explosion right now because I was realizing as we're recording, we got big Game of Thrones episode coming up. We got Avengers Endgame coming out. This is going to be a week for escaping into your fantasy world and possibly watching characters you love die. Real nice break.
I didn't think about that. Is that all coming this weekend?
Yeah, Endgame is Thursday.
Yep. Wow.
And then Sunday is the big Game of Thrones thing.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but I did have some Star Wars adventures this week.
Good. What'd you have?
I finally finished reading the Darth Vader comic, including everything about building his castle on Mustafar, which is really great and interesting stuff that I'm sure we'll talk about in depth on the show at some point because I know it has set off lots of fan theories and whatnot.
In short, now that you've completed, just in short, this is in our time. Did you like a lot of the stuff towards the end?
Yes,
you got into it, which I did too. But
yeah, I feel like it was a real attempt, without getting too deep into it, to set Vader off on his path and say what keeps him motivated when he's sort of cleared of the initial motivations he would have, such as wiping out the Jedi and maybe wanting Padme back. What keeps him moving? What keeps him going? And
I feel like
it did a really great job of that. And, this would be a spoiler, but so tune out for 15 seconds if you don't want. The great stuff about the possessed mask where, a Sith spirit is truly living inside the mask. Doesn't have powers, but it can speak to people and manipulate people, which is one of the powers of the Sith.
Yeah.
That starts to go to, yet more evidence in the canon of Sith hauntings, spirits lingering.
Yeah.
Feels like it could be an easy path back to life for Sheev Palpatine.
Yeah, and again, I don't think J.J. Abrams and Chris Terrio read that comic, but maybe they did. Maybe they did, or maybe Charles Soule read some earlier stuff from Force Awakens. You never know. It can connect in some way. I don't say that because we get a lot of questions sometimes. Do you think this panel on page 14 of this comic will be? No, I don't think J.J.'s aware of that, but what Joseph just said is right. That's a great Star Wars adventure to realize, the path might be set.
There's so many of those. Yeah. And then I did real quick play Battlefront 2 and got Dooku's jammies. So he has his Dark Ritual outfit, which we've all been calling his jammies because they look like jammies. But they then are, he has his actual jammies from that Clone Wars episode. And it is so beautiful because it doesn't even look like Star Wars, Jennifer. It just looks like this is probably what Christopher Lee wore.
Right.
Just like silky, black, beautiful pajamas.
I imagine him arriving to set like that, sitting in his trailer.
Yeah. I'll have the silky pajamas.
Beautiful. Just beautiful.
Jen, adventures in life in Star Wars?
No adventures per se. I'm thinking I want to do some more videos, more craft videos. Yeah. So I have one idea that I'm going to try and do where I'm going to make cupcakes. Mm-hmm. There's these things. You guys aren't going to know this.
You had me at cupcakes.
But there's these princesses like that. You put a stick of Barbie in a cake, and the cake part of it looks like a ball gown for the dress.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So I was like, I want to do that for Star Wars.
Yeah.
And then I was at Target, and I was like, Snoke. Maybe he could wear a ball gown. I don't know. Can I turn him into this cupcake thing? I don't know.
And then you eat the dress off Snoke, and then Snoke still remains?
Snoke still remains. And I was like, how do I not damage the action figure? Because they're going to be little mini cakes.
Okay.
But I'm gonna wrap them in saran wrap to protect him.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Wait a minute. You have one. Is it cupcakes or cakes?
They're going to be cupcakes because for the 3¾ action.
You got the Snoke cake with gold frosting, and then you got 8 Praetorian Guard cakes with red frosting.
Oh, oh,
you got
yeah,
a diorama
delicious.
You could eat.
Oh my gosh,
yeah.
That's amazing. That's pretty amazing. Oh, gosh. How many cupcakes can I make? I'm not a baker. Let's get that straight.
Oh, cupcakes. Yeah. Even I can do cupcakes.
I just have ideas. Yeah. I'm an ideas person.
You're the executive executive producer of tweets. Eat it if you have to. Well, that's quite an adventure. Well, we'll look for that. We'll look for that on Jennifer Landa's YouTube page.
Gosh, that sounds amazing.
It does. I didn't have many adventures, just a busy week, work, getting back into life. My birthday happened.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a very quiet birthday. All my energy went into Chicago. And had a last minute attempt at a gathering, and most people were busy. And
so sorry.
It was good because I sat at the Hollywood Improv back bar and started to fall asleep.
Oh, really?
About 10 o'clock at night.
Oh, no.
And was like, maybe this year ain't birthday year. Maybe this ain't the one. That was it. And I got my first like ever really official massage.
Oh, really?
Like at a place. Like I've gone to the mall place and sat down in the chair, put a towel over my head and go to town, right? I've gone to chiropractors, but I've never gone to the, we'd like to check you in and then we will, here's your iPad and
your
and
snow grove.
So we'll see.
Nice.
A lot of stuff.
Well, next year we'll plan ahead.
We will. Plan ahead indeed. But we want to get into some Star Wars news because even after Celebration, there's no break. There's more things to talk about, Jennifer.
Surprisingly, yes, there's a little bit of news. So for the past few months, we've been hearing that Jon Favreau is using cutting-edge technology on his new Star Wars series, The Mandalorian. We got a little bit more insight into what this tech is when Collider's, Steve Weintraub spoke with actor Giancarlo Esposito. Esposito says the show was partially shot in a big empty warehouse with blue screens all around. There were tracking cameras everywhere, which would capture human performances in a digital environment. This space is what they called the volume, and it's where it's an odd name, but it's where they would do most of their acting. He said that set pieces are brought in, where they can control the physical atmosphere of what is projected on the walls and control how gravity is. There's a second part of the story, but I wanted to talk about this technology. What in the world? First of all, do you think that he's a motion captured character?
We just know.
Yeah,
we know because
we saw.
Gosh, dang it! It's because I don't know. I didn't see the footage.
He might be doing both.
Might be doing both.
I mean, if he was in the volume for that long, who knows?
The volume sounds like something from a Clone Wars lost episode. I was in the volume.
Yeah, Obi-Wan disguised himself as a bounty hunter and infiltrated the volume. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, we suspected and thought there were some different things going into this. What was it? The Russo brothers were the ones that were like, he's doing some crazy things in there.
Right.
Well, we just know that in there was the volume.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like trying to have some sort of happy medium of having like the physical things that the actor is interacting with there and real and then everything else behind it, you know.
Right.
Kind of what some of the actors in the prequels, I think, complained about, of like, everything is a blue square. You know, if I understood this was a cabinet in front of me, it would help me. And it sounds like this is the kind of like the cabinet's there and nothing else.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is going to be interesting.
Did
you get a sense from what we saw? And I don't, it sounds like, again, we're bragging. We're not. We're fortunate for there. Did anything that we saw in that teaser trailer that seemed make you think that it was shot in the volume?
No, I mean, everything looks good and realistic. Yeah. I think the thing that I thought when I saw the footage, and this makes me think as well, is I think it might feel a little claustrophobic, and that might even be a good thing.
Yeah,
where it feels like, you know, everything is a little confined. Like, because even some of the little bits that we've seen have been in photos of just the street.
Yeah,
it seems like, oh, well, that's a little bit of street, but there's a lot of CGI that's going to create the rest of the street.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly what I was thinking. So that's why I was like, well, maybe that's why what you guys saw was not as truly exciting per se, because they haven't finished it CGI wise.
It absolutely could be. Yeah. There was one thing that I woke up in the middle of the night thinking about one specific thing we saw, which I don't know if I want to say.
Oh, okay. Yeah, don't.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's a thing that is on one of the actors' faces that weirded me out when I saw it. And then I just woke up in the middle of the night going like, Maybe they're going to take that off his face. How's that for mystery?
What in the world? Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I saw it. I'm not even sure what I know, which is great, which is great.
What about the whole gravity thing? Did you guys see anything that would, like, say that there's weird gravity?
I think I could be entirely wrong. I think this is an actor probably being interviewed in the moment. I think he means that there was probably, like, he was put in, like, a cockpit or something that moves.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Or that he was put in a contraption. I don't think that... I feel like we would know technologically if, like, Hollywood had been like, oh, yeah, we invented a cool blue screen room, and also we can change gravity as we know it.
I just was like, that's going to be weird if all of a sudden you're playing with gravity in the show. Like, all of a sudden characters start, you know, lifting up like they're in space. So that makes much more sense if you're in a cockpit.
Yeah. Or there's just the force all around.
The volume.
The
volume
talking.
Sounds like Legend of Luke Skywalker, the tide, the volume.
Well, also in the interview, Giancarlo revealed that Jon Favreau worked with George Lucas to create the Mandalorian series in the first place. He said Favreau worked with George on the series to make it a piece that is relevant to what's going on in the world today. Giancarlo reiterated this claim again when he said that Favreau, quote, figured out the story of the Mandalorian with George Lucas. So, how much of a hint? I mean, we know that Jon Favreau had obviously been working on these scripts since he was a child or whatever. So did he just present his old notebooks to George and go, here, George, what do you think? Where can we shape this?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is definitely like take with a grain of salt because this is an actor, you know, reporting what Favreau probably said to him.
Right.
I don't, for a lot of these Lucas things, I feel like it's a lot of people going with like, hey, George, I feel like your big picture idea, you know, was this. Does that make sense to you? And George probably going, yeah. And what if you did this?
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's not, to me, like, since we know from that trailer that the main idea of The Mandalorian is there's a vacuum in government power. And what happens then when the New Republic can't get up and running fast enough to help people? And I think as much as George Lucas wants to tell a hopeful story of good characters like Leia and Mon Mothma getting a government working, George Lucas is still the person who doesn't trust organizations in government. So I imagine it's almost about that, where Favreau would go like, my big picture is, you know, everything's fallen apart in kind of these impoverished parts of the galaxy and the new government isn't doing enough to help them. And I think George would go like, yeah, that's a great idea. I love
it. And that's it.
This is utter conjecture on my part.
I think you're right.
But that's kind of the way I see that conversation.
Yeah, I think there's always, and we're going to even talk about it more, there's always a little bit of a rush to claim George approves in some way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is great. I would want it.
Absolutely.
You know, George, do you listen to Force Center? I'd want the approval. But I don't think George is interested in rolling up his sleeves and sitting down and figuring out story. But we saw, look, he stopped by a Game of Thrones set and quote directed a scene. He made a couple of jokes and stuff to Kit Harington
and Amelia
Clark. So, but then they say George Lucas directed a scene, which believe me, I wish he would direct an episode of The Mandalorian. But
yeah.
I don't think he's interested. So, but I think it's fascinating. I think it shows that Favreau loves Star Wars. He wants it to fit. He wants it to work. And we know that he dumped out his virtual box of Kenner figures and his plan and
changed gravity.
Yeah. Lucasfilm said, we'll take the Boba Fett one. Hold on to that figure. Don't worry about that one.
Yeah.
Have at it.
Right. Well, George Lucas has been making the rounds lately because J.J. Abrams recently said that he talked with George quite a bit about the direction of the final film in the Skywalker saga and said that Lucasfilm is still repurposing ideas that Lucas came up with prior to the sale of his company to Disney. J.J. said that the goal of Episode 9 was to give a conclusion to all the saga films. Quote, there have been a lot of ideas since the beginning, since George first came up with this, of where things could go in the last film. We had a meeting with him before we even wrote the script about the rise of Skywalker, end quote. So again, how much do you think, I mean, I feel like George Lucas and J.J. Abrams seem to have a pretty good relationship, right?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, not so much as like a Dave Filoni kind of thing, where him and Dave really worked together.
Yeah.
I guess how much input of George's input do you think affected the story of Episode 9? Did he like kind of map it out?
Zero to 1%? I don't know. I think it's a rush to claim George because you want that blessing from fans.
Yeah, I guess I don't know why to me this feels like maybe a little bit more meat on its bones in terms of a conversation because of what we have learned that Lucas did offer these broad strokes and that if George Lucas had directed the sequel trilogy, the son of Han and Leia still would have fallen. There still would have been a young woman Jedi. Luke still would have retreated, all those things.
Yeah.
And in terms of, obviously Lucas changes his mind about what the big picture is. Yeah. You know, he's said lots of different things about what these last nine movies would be, or last three movies. Mm-hmm. He said the story was done at six. He said, no, it's nine.
Yeah.
You know, he's changed his mind a lot.
Yeah.
But I can see the whole sequel trilogy still having the broad stroke of Lucas really wanting to do the story of, well, great, our heroes won, but they need to teach the young generation how to win.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that is what the sequel trilogy is about, ultimately.
Yeah.
And I can definitely see George either in his original drafts or super supporting the return of Palpatine.
Mm.
I mean, if you look at the history of George Lucas, one thing that he does is bring characters back.
And
look at Darth Maul.
Like, Darth Maul, 100%.
You know, he changes his mind and brings characters back. He wasn't about Boba Fett, and then fans loved Boba Fett. And it's like, I'm going to give him an origin story.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, so I could see Lucas really being on board with the return of Palpatine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. It would make sense. Totally makes sense. And I think it does make sense as a story idea. But yeah. One day we'll get the whole scoop on George's relationship. I think it's curmudgeonly at times with Star Wars, not J.J. And other times he loves it. You know, Solo, he showed up. He's very present.
Yeah.
Very, you know, Mandalorian. I keep bumping my mic today. Mandalorian, very, like, let's take a photo. I'm here.
He didn't do that per se with The Last Jedi. Rian Johnson did not talk about him talking with George, as far as I can remember.
It's in the documentary, but there's no set
visits. That's right. How can I forget when he calls, right? He gets the big call.
But there's nothing I'm aware of, unless you know, Joseph, of him showing up on set being like, here's me in a porg.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was a set visit, but I don't think it's super documented.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
But I mean, more power to George if he is in this place where a bunch of storytellers want to come to him and say, I just want to know. This is not like official, like I'm not asking for your signature because that's not the way this new power structure works, but I just want to know what you think.
That's nice. Right.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Right.
Well, more information is slowly trickling out about Project Luminous. Writer Kevin Scott is involved in the project, and he shared more backstory on how it came to be. He said that back in September 2018, he and four other writers were whisked off to Skywalker Ranch to join the Lucasfilm editorial team and story group to start work on a massive Star Wars event. That's what he used.
Massive.
Mm-hmm. The retreat featured days of intense workshops where they came up with new ideas and broke story. At night, the group sat next to a roaring fire in the ranch's guest inn and chatted about the day's events and just life in general. The writers had a second retreat at Skywalker Ranch this past March where they watched A New Hope. The first time they watched A New Hope, the second time they watched Empire Strikes Back. So the yes, that's right. I'm messing up here. Anyways,
they watched a Star Wars movie.
So that's important. And since that retreat, they have been busy working, as Kevin said, developing the ideas that came about in those workshops, creating something they hope is very special. So some people are speculating that this might be the comprehensive biography of Yoda.
Ooh, interesting.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Not just the Force.
Okay.
That's very interesting.
But like the life and times of Yoda?
right.
I maybe think Yoda could be a vessel to telling the story, but everything about it seems much more that it's about the Force. Using the symbol of the Jedi Order. You know, to me, it's just the most compelling thing about this to me is timeline. Of like, is it going to jump around the timeline? It feels like something where like the Force itself is threatened, you know, something like maybe even going into the Force priestesses from Clone Wars and midichlorians and kind of larger ideas of the Force, since a lot of these authors have been pushing into that territory.
Which is one of the great pulls you threw out there last week, that, these aren't just randomly selected authors. You know?
Yeah.
These are like, you all have certain experiences in the Force. And so, Project Luminous, Yoda. I mean, I don't know what I want it to be, but ideas are forming, and it's interesting that it's comprehensive, that it's a volume.
Yeah.
Books.
I don't know, formation of the Jedi, like the actual formation, but I like that in that there's a threat. You know, because I still think Dan and Dave might be doing something in that era, but I don't think it's going to be prime Jedi and put some rocks up at Octo.
Yeah, but I could see, like, you know, this is, you know, we kick off with Yoda and his, you know, 13-year-old Padawan, Dooku, and because they have been both, Kevin and Claudia have been in Dooku mode over these last couple books. But it just seems to me that it's going to be about the Force. And about the Jedi, and like maybe it's something that jumps through the timeline, and maybe, you know, because it's also 2020, episode 9 is out.
Yeah.
You know, if it is some threat internally to the Force, and we jump all over the place from Old Republic to Yoda and young Dooku to Luke and young Ben, you know, dealing with it in some way, you know, that kind of interwoven thing.
I like it.
Yeah, who knows?
I like it. Yeah, who knows? So I'm in danger of building up some expectations for myself.
Right? Massive. I like that. Massive Star Wars event. Well, forget eBay. If you have $400,000 to spare, have I got an action figure for you. Collectibles dealer Brian Rockfall is selling a vintage 1979 Boba Fett action figure with a firing rocket pack for $365,000. The hefty price tag is because the figure is one of only three of its type known to exist. This particular Boba Fett was a prototype, since Kenner never actually ended up selling the rocket launching Fett because they were concerned the rocket mechanism would be a choking hazard or poke some kids' eye out. But the main reason it's so expensive is because the figure has an L-shaped firing mechanism, and even though it was a prototype, it has a copyright embossed on the back of the leg, which means it was close to the final sculpt ready for production. So my question is, would either of you ever, if you had money, this kind of money, would you ever pay $365,000 for an action figure?
As much as I love action figures, I would spend $365,000 on hundreds of action figures. I would spend that much money because I, as Star Wars Celebration taught me, I have a problem. But no, not on just the one. It's crazy. I understand. I understand if you're a high-end collector or even at this point an investor, because man, walking around the Celebration floor, it is amazing how the original figures have shot up in value.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. There's the weird, sad kind of bucket of loose figures. That's, you know, a bunch of Lobots.
Yeah. Oh yeah, a bunch of Ugnaughts.
There's like
smocks.
Yeah, like one of her friends was gonna be like, oh, you know, I destroyed my sister's Hoth Leia when I was a kid. You know, maybe I'll grab her a carded Hoth Leia. Like, whoa, okay, that's very, very expensive. That's very expensive.
Yeah, it is. You're right. I remember even at the last Celebration, I was like, had the same kind of thought about an Emperor's Royal Guard.
Yeah.
Ooh, I love that figure and on the card. And I was there and I said, hey, how much is that one? They put it in my hands, kind of like a, let's get you in that car.
Oh,
like, yeah, here you go. And I turned it over and saw the price and was like, and I'm on my way. Thank you. Here you go. Bye-bye. And it's, so I, $365,000, I hope I never find myself in that position, because if I have that much money to do that, I hope I spend it and share it on other people and things.
Yeah. Let me take a million people out to dinner. Yeah. I'm bad at math. That probably doesn't work out.
Depends on where you go, right?
Yeah, right. We'll file this under a rumor gone wild, but according to Nerdist, Lucasfilm may be developing a Knights of the Old Republic movie. At Star Wars Celebration, Kathleen Kennedy was asked if they were developing any projects around Knights of the Old Republic, and she replied, quote, you know, we talk about that all the time. Yes, we are developing something to look at, end quote. So it may seem like an innocuous comment, but to some, it's confirmation that an Old Republic movie is definitely in the works. What do you guys think? Wait, I'm confused because I was like, was it the rumor that Dan and Dave were doing an Old Republic movie? Now they're like, no, it's something new.
Something we don't know yet.
Yeah.
Could be, could not be.
Yeah. Right. I think that, and I think that there's a tendency to conflate the Old Republic could be anything in thousands of years of storytelling. There's very little locked in canon versus a direct adaptation of the fan-loved video game Knights of the Old Republic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think this is the innocuous quote that generated lots, in my opinion, of misleading headlines of it's in development.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As we've mentioned before, you know, having the benefit of being in Hollywood in development, I've had two TV shows in development. You won't ever see them. You know, but to say in development, it's more powerful when Lucasfilm does it, obviously.
Right.
But in development means, hey, you know, they could have an Akmena show in development.
Yeah.
It just means they're looking at it and saying, well, what if? Can we use anything from that? Yeah. So I feel like those headlines are blowing that quote out of proportion, in my opinion.
I remember like maybe I've been in town 21 years, but like 18, 17 years ago, ran into like a producer who wanted to hear my ideas. And I called home. A producer wants to hear my ideas. I want to respect the passion of the Old Republic fans because they hear this, they get excited, they want this, and I am not a fan. I just don't know the time period as well. I didn't play the game. So I am open to it. I read the first Bane novel. Definitely intrigued.
Yeah.
Definitely intrigued. Reading the Vader comic when they started going to a little, you know, quote, Old Republic era stuff, I wasn't as pulled in by it, but I'm ready to, I want it all out there, like official canon. What's the story? Let's do it.
Yeah.
And I think it will eventually come.
Yeah, I'm so excited for the time period of Old Republic, the idea of thousands of Jedi fighting thousands of Sith, and what does that world look like? I think that's great. If they decided to do this, if Dan and Dave were like, yes, actually, our series is a direct adaptation of the video game series Knights of the Old Republic, I'd be fine with that, too. Yeah. But I feel like it's way early.
Way early.
Yeah.
I'm just remembering now that I think it was like last year, a couple years ago, where somebody asked her about the 1313 video game, or like, I think it was like old concept art. She's like, oh yeah, we think about that. We definitely don't want to lose that. We might reuse that at some point. And now we're getting in the Clone Wars, right?
Yeah.
The two characters who are from 1313. So who knows? Maybe it will come to fruition, but as of now, it's just a rumor.
Just a rumor.
That's it. Yeah. That's the news.
That's the news. More to come. More breakdowns of all these stories. Love these little news bites that come on out. Thank you, Jennifer. And we're going to get ready to dive into our main topic, the redemption of Ben Solo. That is the redemption of Ben Solo. But before we do that, we want to recommend an audio book we think you should try out on us. Joseph, we got a big one this week.
Yeah, that's right. We are recommending The Last Jedi novelization by Jason C. Fry. I wanted to pick something to recommend this week that's got some juicy Ben Solo bits in it. Mm-hmm. And the book does not reveal anything, but it hints at that presence of Snoke poking at things.
Mm. Poking at things.
Read about or listen about poking Snoke.
in that cupcake, golden cupcake there. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/4Center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4Center for your free audio book. All right, we're going to dive into this topic. And like we said up top, we really wanted to get to this. And it was good to pump the brakes a little bit and wait to get even just a little bit more information to see. But this has been on the minds, I think, of people, quite frankly, since episode 7.
Yeah.
And that is the redemption of Ben Solo, Kylo Ren himself. Joseph, we are going to roll up our sleeves on this one.
Yeah, let's dive in. So we talked about this a little bit because we got some good fan questions, but I just wanted to start with the actual word redemption. So the dictionary defines redemption as the action of saving or being saved from sin, error, or evil. So we're really talking about that moment of turning away from the darkness. And obviously there's many deep religious connotations, mythical connotations. I think the kind of the mythical element of it is probably why it's stuck in Star Wars, because it's, you know, an arc of a dark character to have that moment of redemption. But to me, I think it's important that redemption, as one of our listeners pointed out, is not forgetting or forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
It's just simply turning away from the darkness.
Yeah.
And making that one choice in that moment.
Yeah.
To not continue down the dark path. So first off, do you have any feelings about that in terms of what it means to Star Wars in the bigger picture of that definition of redemption?
I just think it's an important place to start clarifying and defining and reminding all of us, because I too can get caught up in the redemption of Darth Vader. We're going to talk about that obviously a little bit, but where that, you know, what's from Princess Bride, that word, I do not think it means what you think it means.
Yeah.
It can, the definition of it can blur as it folds out over the story.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a thumbs up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Forget about it, Vader.
It's not you are innocent. Here's your belongings and get back out in the world.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Jennifer, how do you feel about just the definition?
The definition is interesting, too, because when I looked it up a while back, I saw that it was also the atonement, atoning for a fault or mistake.
Mm.
So there is some action involved. So that's why that's where the whole redemption of Vader becomes a little complicated, which we'll talk about. And even for Kylo Ren, it's like, all right, so this is one piece of the puzzle if you decide to change. But then what are you going to do about it, in essence? What actions are you going to take to make amends for what you did in the past?
Right.
So then it's like, well,
Yeah, that's really interesting, because Vader, you could say, you know, he could have had a moment of redemption on some far-off planet where he was going to slaughter everyone there and decided not to.
Right.
But his actual action fits the idea of atonement, because he's course correcting.
Right.
Of like, I enabled the Sith to rule, and now I'm ending that rule.
Exactly.
Yeah, interesting. So it's a direct call and response kind of thing.
The atonement of Ben Solo is in it. That's I love that. I love that definition. Yeah. That kind of like, yeah, we're seeing it, you know, in Game of Thrones over the last couple seasons. You know, we see a lot of like, I've done bad. I'm here to make up for that.
Yep. But
I know I still did that.
Right. Yeah, it is not ever going to change it.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to make a different response. Yeah. And in some cases, like direct responses.
Right.
To things I did. Yeah.
The atonement. I like that.
So how do you feel about the idea of redemption or atonement in that context that we talked about for Darth Vader Anakin? Is it the right word? Do you think he was redeemed? Is that your understanding of the story? Or do you think we misuse the word?
You know, I was doing some research a while back. In the making of the Revenge of the Sith book, George actually says Anakin can't be redeemed for all the pain and suffering he's caused.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't right the wrongs, but he stops the horror. And then in a Bill Moyers interview many years ago, he talked about how basically the whole Star Wars saga is about Anakin's transformation into this evil person. And by the end of the trilogy, the original trilogy, how do we get him back to that little sweet boy that we met in The Phantom Menace? And in essence, it's because of Luke, his son, that redeems him.
Yeah.
It's really interesting how George looks at it and how George changes his mind a lot, you know? But yeah, so was he redeemed?
I mean, that word, it seems to always in our conversation stick with you that even with these definitions, that it bothers you.
Yeah, I mean, it's because it's like it was a grand final act, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's really through the love of his son and his son believing that there is still good in him that he is able to be redeemed. With in essence, without Luke, Vader would never have been redeemed.
Yes, that's the way I interpret the story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, which bleeds over to that Chosen One conversation of George has said Anakin's the Chosen One, but I still think you can get a couple of votes in smaller voting districts for Luke.
Absolutely. Or Chosen Ones.
You know,
right.
You know.
Right.
Yeah, as far as Vader, you know, it's a little, dare I say, biblical or spiritual in the sense of, hey, you might have been redeemed and forgiven by the Lord God Almighty, but doesn't mean the people on earth thought so too, you know, and mm-hmm. and it's a bigger concept, but just I said this on Jedi Council recently because we have said it so many times here in Force Center. Bloodline shows a great example. Claudia Gray did a great job of the galaxy didn't know that Darth Vader at the end threw the Emperor. They didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Luke didn't tell anyone. He didn't go on HoloNet interviews. And even if he did, who would have believed him?
Yeah.
Who would have believed him? 6-7 years prior to Force Awakens, they're like, Leia, you're the daughter of a killer. So I think he was atoned, redeemed for the Force or his family, but not for the galaxy.
Yeah.
Right. There you go. Know? Yeah.
Yeah. And yet it does seem like there are myths because Rey says, oh, but and it was, you know, when Luke says it was a Jedi who trained and created Darth Vader, and she says, and a Jedi who saved him.
Right.
Mm.
You know, so it seems like maybe it's not a part of, like, you look up, like, the history of the Galactic Empire on the Hollow Wikipedia that exists in universe in Star Wars. It's not going to be like, and then Darth Vader was reconsumed by the light side spirit of Anakin Skywalker. And, like, but those whispers, that same whispers that Rey heard of the myth of Luke Skywalker, that those contained, like, yes, and he did this mighty act of rescuing his father so his father could rescue the galaxy.
Maybe he did try to tell people. Maybe he did. And that's why Luke got grumpy. I try to tell you the truth. No one listening.
No one listens.
I'm out of here.
Okay. So I wanted to get that baseline on Vader and Anakin, which means like that it sounds like some of us are still a little torn on what that.
Right.
To me, I just feel like it is a great redemption story in that in this absolutely pivotal moment, the one that could, in theory, fulfill this prophecy. Vader did something. Anakin did something that was next to impossible for him. He had so buried any sense of goodness or decency in the fact that Luke's belief got to him. All of that, to me, is still, like, moving and powerful. And then, you know, we get the side of Star Wars storytelling that's real world. And like, yeah, of course, it's not. If Anakin had survived, it wouldn't have been, like, he wouldn't have just been, you know, banging some stormtrooper drums and dancing with the Ewoks.
Right.
Like,
right.
you don't forgive and forget that that quickly. So that's sort of groundwork to actually talk about Ben Solo.
I just want the image of, like, Wicket walking up to, like, the ghost of Vader or the leftover Vader. Like, oh, okay.
Yep. So if we accept the idea that redemption is not forgetting or forgiveness, but it is turning away from the darkness or even taking an atonement moment where you are reversing one specific choice, do you want that for Ben Solo?
There comes the grumbles.
It's so complicated for me because what I love about Star Wars is that it teaches us life lessons that we all can learn from. We can share with our children. And with Vader, you know, it's a great life lesson. You can make your choices. Your choices will lead to good or bad things. And in the end, he quote unquote redeems himself. But with Ben Solo, he is such a real life character to me, the way that Adam Driver plays him, the way that he has been written. He is so complicated and like a real, to me, he's like a real world monster. And so can't, you know, just him. I want to believe that everyone can change, but the reality is there are some people in this world that are so sick that they can't change. So then it's like, well, what punishment fits their crime? So what would be Ben's punishment? I just think that it's just too pat if it's like, certainly not forgiving and forgetting, but if it's like, okay, well, you made this choice to change, great. That's why I love the desert island theory. Where he's going to have to sit and stew and reflect on what the life that he chose.
Yeah.
That's what kids need to learn.
Yeah. I think I like the idea of redemption for him because I agree with you about there's lots of like parallels to like real life behavior that is destructive. Mm-hmm. And it does feel a little bit more real and not quite as mythic as Anakin.
Mm-hmm.
And there is something to me about you're so close to just making a better choice, Ben Solo, of not continuing to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something to me that's powerful about him just stopping because he can. Because he's not as far gone in some ways as Vader.
Mm.
But that's not, again, that's like not about forgetting and forgiveness. It's just stop it.
Mm.
It's just stop, you know, polluting the world with evil.
Mm.
You know, just making a different choice. How do you feel, Ken?
I am really excited for this episode because I think I have the least to contribute to the conversation, but the most to learn. No, I'm excited to sit and talk about my feelings. I don't have a set idea on this one because just as a Star Wars fan or a myth and fantasy and sci-fi fan, more fantasy, you know, and just a fan of stories, by the way, the idea, going back to episode 7, that Kylo would eventually return to being Ben Solo or be good, something just seems like, oh yeah, that's probably the Star Wars way.
Yeah.
I think it's only in later years that we are able to look back at Darth Vader's story and be like, but wait, he killed younglings. He stood by while a planet was destroyed. And it's a little more wonderfully complicated than it was in 77 of he's the good guy, he's the bad guy.
Yeah.
And then the bad guy becomes good at the end. Right. I just grew up with that. Right.
Yeah.
I didn't think about all the other wonderful things that I love that we have to think of. So I don't know about Kylo. I don't know about Ben. I love the idea that Luke and Leia are like, he's gone. But Luke says no one's really ever gone.
Yeah, I feel like this is a little bit of my headcanon, but I feel like Luke's perspective is so I can't reach him. Because I'm one of the people who, unlike my father, I was a beacon of hope to my father. I was what my father had always wanted. I was what my father thought he lost.
Mm. Right.
For Kylo, I'm one of the things as one of the many, you know, authority figures who he thinks let him down. I'm one of the people who drove him to the dark side.
Right.
And Luke can't get through to him, but maybe someone else can.
I think that's a great way to see it because otherwise it kind of becomes a quick contradiction, right? If you're just looking at the scene, I'm here to destroy him, but no one's really ever gone. But you know, like, I think what you're saying really makes sense. But, so I just love that the movie ends with Kylo saying, no, I'm Kylo.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm not taking my helmet off.
Right.
My dad asked me, Jen, you pointed out wonderfully last week. My dad said, no, I killed him.
Right.
My boss said, take it off. I killed him. Right. And I'm rebuilding the helmet.
I don't like advice on my fashion choices. Yeah.
Basically.
You know? So I don't know if the series, I'm sorry, I am rambling. I don't know if the series can end with Kylo being bad to the end.
Yeah, let me, I know that some fans have thrown this out to us just directly of, can you live as a lifetime Star Wars fan with the idea of Han and Leia's son, Luke's nephew, is so corrupted that he can't be redeemed. Or not even redeemed. We just go to that language where they can't just stop.
Mm. Right, right. I could.
Yeah, me too.
But I think in general, maybe no.
Yeah.
I could only because I just, I'm, you made your choice, kid.
Yep.
You made it.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's how life works.
He's been consumed.
Yeah.
Or at least, and we'll talk about this in a minute, but yeah. He's trying to consume himself with this dark energy, even though he's not 100% there yet.
And he could make the choice to come back from that, too. That's right. Also something I believe in, too. But, like, so if it ends that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Cersei Lannister is a very sympathetic character. She's made some choices on what she wants to do.
Right.
You know?
Right.
There you go.
Yeah. I think in the big picture, he will come back somehow, but handling it is going to be an amazing task. But let's talk a little bit more in depth. So Kylo does say some kind of similar things to Vader about his light side self, where he says to Han, your son is gone. He was weak and foolish like his father. Lots of stuff in canon with Vader referring to Anakin as the Jedi and saying, he was weak, so I killed him, all that kind of things. But do you think Kylo sees his light side as dead? Do you think he killed Ben Solo? Part of what I'm driving to is Vader seems like Anakin was a Jedi. I consumed him. I killed him. He's dead. He doesn't exist. It is only I, Vader. And going along, Jennifer, with your more real-world perspective, it almost seems like Kylo's like, I changed my name.
Yeah.
But he's not as obsessed with Ben Solo as this other identity that he's suppressed. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does. It does. Yeah. It really does. Especially if you read a lot of the new canon with Thrawn saying Anakin refers to, or Vader refers to Anakin as the Jedi.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Which is great. But how does that make you feel about Kylo as a character? If it's not like Ben was a different identity, but like more like Kylo's just kind of a mask he's wearing, even as the name.
Right. I think that if he was burned all over his body to crisp, things might change. I think that he still, which is what is, it's like he's not playing. I think that initially he probably tried this on, literally tried on the mask, see how it felt.
Yeah.
He liked it, but he still is not 100% there, which is what we'll talk about in a moment. I think he recognizes that his light side is not dead.
Yeah, because he feels the pull to it, you know.
He's afraid of it.
Yeah, and it angers him. It frustrates. I go back to that scene where he's, fighting with Rey in The Force Awakens at the end, where he's, pounding his wound. It's like he needs to get himself, hyped to be bad.
I totally agree with that. That's what I've been thinking about a lot of, there's a lot in Anakin where he gives in. He's always felt this anger. He's had sort of relatable reasons to be angry of, being a slave, being separated from his mother, the Jedi being kind of cold and making him feel unwelcome. And he has all this anger.
Right.
And eventually he gets to let it out.
Yes.
And unleash his full force powers and kind of, it's dark and twisted and it's wrong. But I think from his perspective, get to be his full self.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it feels like what Ben is mad about is that everybody's telling him who to be.
Right.
And he can't live up to everybody, and he feels like everybody's rejecting him. So Ben feels like he is searching for identity.
Mm-hmm.
So, Anakin gives in to his identity of Vader, and Ben is like, I don't know who I want to be when I grow up. Everybody's telling me who to be.
Right.
I'll try being this, because it's the only part of my heritage I haven't tried.
Mm. Yeah. Look, I what's the old adage? Dress for the job you want? Ben Solo's like, oh, I know what I think I want to be, and I think you said it so well. You got a lot of people telling him what to be. And, did he want to go to Force school? Or they're like, oh, kid's pretty powerful. Send him off to Uncle Luke's private Jedi Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Maybe he's like, no, I want to be a freighter pilot. I don't know. But you, this is not a conversation specifically about Revenge of the Sith or Anakin, but you've just said something that I really love, and that is looking back now I love the turn of Anakin and Darth Vader in Revenge of Sith more than I did then.
Yeah.
Because then I was ready, like, no, he should just slash Jedi and I am Darth Vader. But I love that he falls to his knees and is like, I can't fight this anymore.
Yeah.
I can't fight this anymore. This guy's offering me what I want. I got to keep him alive.
Yep.
That's why I think he kills Mace, right? Mace, don't kill the guy that's just promised me to keep my wife alive.
Yeah.
And that he falls in a different way and it's more deeper. Hey, George. George had some deep thoughts that we didn't pay attention to.
He did, yeah.
But it's a little different for Ben, and I think it is, you know, I think he searches and searches until that throne room scene.
I think that's what makes him feel a little bit more real world, like you're talking about, Jennifer, of just sort of like, you don't have to be doing this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It makes it sometimes maybe harder to empathize with him.
Right.
One of my favorite little moments in Last Jedi is, did you come here to save me?
Yeah.
No.
No.
It's like, oh crap! You made your you made your choice. You made your choice.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Because so he kind of that moment does feel like I'm still just pushing back against the authority figures in my life.
Yeah. He's like taunting him. Ooh, you're gonna redeem me.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's your one big Jedi act that the whole galaxy whispers about, and everybody's so proud of how you saved, you know, your father. Can you save me? No.
Yeah,
that's so great. Yeah. Putting him in a Kylo in a timeout there, I think. So why do you think Kylo does feel the pull to the light? He struggles to kill Han, and when he does, it unbalances him instead of strengthening him. Which is like, that's the whole dark side thing of like, unleash your anger. It gives you focus. And it doesn't give Kylo focus. So how do you feel about that in the whole story of Ben Solo falling to the dark side?
I love it. And it makes me love what Rian Johnson put out there even more.
Yeah.
Because when the movie starts and Kylo's still in trouble.
Yeah.
Because it ends with, hey, Hux, grab Dopey. We got to get his helmet and we're going to go. He's got some training to do.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, what's the dark side? I remember I was excited. What's the dark side training? It didn't go that way. Instead, it went Snoke being like, you're unbalanced. You know, a girl, and he emphasizes, I think it is emphasized oh, I think a girl's could beat you. I think it is supposed to be bad, sexist, taunting.
Yeah.
And it's like this, like, and it's like, oh, he's just still messed up. And I it makes Force Awakens even more powerful for me. I just love what's going on there.
Yeah.
I don't fully.
Does it make you empathize more with Kylo that he is?
Yes.
Or hate him more that he is striving to be what Vader was?
He's
not good at being dark side.
I empathize a little bit. And again, I always talk about Game of Thrones, but we're in the middle of this final season. Like, so I'm going to, but like, you know, it's the Cersei Lannister thing. You go back to season one and she talked, you know, did she ever have a chance with her husband? No. She had a horrible upbringing. But she made those choices. Like, I do empathize with Ben Solo being raised by the great leader of the galaxy, the great pilot of the galaxy, and then your uncle saves the galaxy. That's a lot of weird pressures. And
then held at a distance because people know that you're a time bomb that could be dark or could be light, and everybody holding you at a little bit of a distance.
In the womb, in Aftermath, they talk about hinting at credible light, credible dark.
Yep.
Oh, so I still think he's held to the fire for his choices.
Yeah.
Want to make that clear.
Yeah.
But I go to a lot of that stuff with Snoke in the beginning of Last Jedi. I'd be like, oh, man.
How do you feel about that, Jennifer, about him being unbalanced rather than drawing any focus or power from doing more a horrible dark side thing?
Right. And I really believe, I'm going to psychoanalyze him a little bit. I think that the one thing that he really wanted was his father to love him. He wanted his father to love him and accept him. And we saw it in, was it the last shot? Where we see Han struggling with being a dad and not sure and just like, ugh. And kind of being distant emotionally from him. And you know, who knows if he was a good father or whatnot. I don't know that. But I think that it unbalanced him because it did not heal the pain that he was feeling, which is his father. He wanted his father to love him, and instead he killed him. Well, that didn't solve things. It just made him more upset.
Yeah.
And because I think that at his core, he probably is a very, very good person. He could have been an incredible Jedi. And instead, like we've talked about, he is forcing this. He is trying to be something that he is so not. He's like those, you know, those emo kids where you're like, no, I just, last year you were like this sweet kid and now all of a sudden you want to be this way.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where I'm like, if I knew this kid, if I knew Kylo Ren growing up and I'd seen like, what, how his parents were or whatever, maybe I would be like more sympathetic towards him. Like, oh yeah, his parents, they were not there for him and they really ignored him. But I love Leia and Han. I can't do that. I gotta believe that they were there for him in, emotionally in some capacity.
I grew up in a, you know, in a church environment for a long time. And you'd see a lot of pastors' kids go wrong.
Yes.
And I understood why, you know, and that's not anything on the church, the organization or the parents themselves, but it's just you're like the pastor's kid.
Right. The sheer amount of pressure.
Yeah. And naturally they're going to be the first to try drugs and go a little crazy. It just makes sense every time to me. I don't know. I see a little bit of Kylo in that.
Yeah. That's really good point.
I don't know why this is making me remember a childhood memory where I think it was like fourth grade and there was somebody at school who was always like angry and defiant and attacking people for no reason. He would make fun of me all the time. After school, my mom and I saw him at the grocery store and he just seemed like really happy to see me. He was like, hey, how's it going? And I was like, oh, okay. Hi, Glenn, or whatever the kid's name was. Don't remember. And I was like really shocked by that. I was like, weird. I guess he's just one of those kids who acts different, you know, outside of school. And then the next day at school, he just came up to me on the playground and was like, I saw your loser ass at the grocery store. And it was just sort of like,
what?
How can you fake this to me? You can't hide your reality. Like, and there's something, I don't know, there's something Kylo about that of like, I need this to feel like I have identity, that I have purpose, that I am my own person. I need this anger, but that's not the truth of who I am at all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's so weird. Yeah. So we got a lot of questions to get through.
Yeah, we got a lot.
I do want to just touch briefly on Kylo's inability to fire on Leia. So do you think he would have gone through with destroying Leia on Crait?
That's a great question. I think he might have been peer pressured into it, maybe in a weird way. I think in that moment he's in a cockpit alone. And that doubt, and then his squad mates do what's like, all right, boss ain't firing, we will.
Yeah, and that direct force connection of like, he is feeling who is probably between Luke and Han, I'm going to guess that Leia is the one that he has the deepest connection to.
Yes.
Yep, mother and child reunion is only a moment away. I think under certain circumstances, he would have killed her if he kind of looked around and there was troops and Hux and other people like... You know, I go to like Theon Greyjoy season 2 of Game of Thrones. sorry. See, to this or pro wrestling kids, but just like, I'm doing it. And he looks around, oh, I better kill him because everyone wants me to. And if I don't, I lose them. And I think Kylo could have done that.
Total
Theon
Greyjoy.
Yeah. I think he would have only done it from a distance. I think he doesn't have it in him. To do to Leia what he did to Han.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he barely had it in. He had Han's help, you know?
Right.
Han grabbed the lightsaber and ignited it.
Well, he didn't. Yes. Anyway, you know what I mean. When I say his help, yes, he literally asked for his help. You know, anyway.
I know what you mean.
How do you feel, Jennifer?
Yes, I think that he, peer pressured, I think that's a great way of putting it. I think that he would have almost been like double dog dared. Oh, yeah? I can do it. Press the button.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so we talked a lot about why Ben, for himself, might have want to try on the dark side, and maybe feel called to it a little bit, but how much do we blame Snoke's manipulations? And again, we only know in canon the tiniest bit about this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was thinking about, you know, what we do know of Snoke is that he seems real big on mind projection, so it seems like Snoke really could have been just whispering to Ben for a long, long time. So if that was the story of that, since he is about like 6 years old, this voice, and then as it gets closer to the events of the sequel trilogy, when like Ben is at school with Luke, he's starting to see like full visions of him in his sleep, dreams of Snoke saying, you know, they fear you because you are so powerful. They fear you because of your true light. You know, if that becomes the story, does that change how you feel about Ben? That he's basically, seduced to the dark side by Snoke?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
He means he had no shot, you know? He had no shot. All the pressures we talked about, and then now you got a weird bathrobe dude whispering in you, in your ear. The poor guy's got no shot. And then it goes to Force Awakens, Leia, like, it was Snoke.
Yeah. Yeah, and Luke even has, I'm paraphrasing, but Luke was like, Snoke had already turned his heart.
Yes, very important.
Yeah. So what does that do for your thoughts, Jennifer?
I think he was susceptible, and he was unfortunately open to it, and he allowed himself to be led astray, so to speak. I think that if it wasn't Snoke, maybe it would have been someone else.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that he was searching for this, and he would, or maybe he would have just done it on his own, and he wouldn't have been quite as successful.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. There's a part of me that feels like, and this is just, again, my utter headcanon, that Luke would have been able to keep Ben on the right side of the Force without the intervention of Snoke. Mm. And there's still that idea of like, well, could Luke have seen more, known more, you know, prevented more with Snoke? And then the whole Star Wars question of like, no matter what the circumstances, is it just always about your own personal choice? And like, great, you could have had 1,000 Snokes talking to you. It's still your choice.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So digging into a little bit more of his actual redemption possibilities in episode 9 and what we learned from the episode 9 trailer. Thanks, Jennifer, for your wisdom on making us wait. So just from a plot perspective, we had all been talking about, wow, Snoke's gone. Kylo gets to be the big bad of episode 9. That really makes episode 9, really the focus is going to be his redemption. Right. But if Darth Sidious... Sheev Palpatine is the big bad of episode 9, the ultimate villain. Does that make you think differently about the story of Ben's redemption?
No, still complicated.
Yeah.
Because I still see this as Kylo versus Rey and Palpatine's the prize in a weird way, or something yeah. in the middle. I know we're just talking here. We're not saying for a fact that Sidious is the big bad or anything, but he could be. He could walk out as a clone or a robot or a robot and be a lightsaber. You know, he could be.
He could be a lightsaber?
He could be a lightsaber. He could be in a lightsaber.
A weird transformer.
Yeah. My lips are sticking. But I still see this as Kylo versus Rey.
Yeah.
Kylo versus Rey. But Sidious is a wonderful wrench in the story.
Mm.
Like, what's Kylo want from him? What does he want from Kylo? That's where this conversation now turns.
Yeah, yeah. How does it make you think differently of Ben's redemption?
I really am glad, actually, because I want to kind of drill down into the turmoil and struggle that Kylo Ren is having. I think we're going to really get that. I think that Sidious is now going to be the one perhaps whispering in his ear that Snoke was. So now what's going to happen?
Yeah.
Is he going to continue blossoming in the dark side? Or is he going to change his mind and say, no, I don't want to choose this path anymore? That's going to be really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm really intrigued by it because it got my writer brain going of... there's lots of different points in the story to have Ben be redeemed or not.
Mm.
Because mm-hmm. it could be that's the climax of the second act, so the third act is them facing Palpatine together. It could be mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. That Ben and Rey team up to defeat Sidious, even though they're still, you know, kind of a little bit Star Wars poetry with what happened with Snoke, of like, yeah. right now we are on the same side for a moment, and really save Ben's redemption for the final moment.
Yeah.
It gives him something to have a big atonement type act.
Mm-hmm.
If he That's is good. Literally yeah. doing something to help stop Sidious.
The idea that he does something to save Rey has been floated out there before, so it's certainly not something brand new, but that would be a great circumstance for it to happen in, you know?
Yeah.
All right, let's go get the big guy. Oh, this guy's pretty big.
Yeah.
I'm going to need the Contra cheat code here.
Yeah, absolutely. In order to maybe kind of further that conversation, I want to talk a little bit about the relationship between Sidious and Kylo Ren. What do you think Darth Sidious will think of Kylo Ren and what might he want from him?
Wow.
Jeez.
Wow.
What would he, I mean... I think he would like him. I think he'd be charmed by him.
Come sit down.
He wants to go to the opera with him.
Yeah.
He sees,
you know, Vader's grandson. He's like, okay, you chip off the old block. I like it.
Yeah.
You have some raw power. We're gonna try and mold you.
Yeah, for sure.
I think he would get excited.
A lot of molding. Yeah. yeah.
A lot
yeah.
of molding.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That, well, you are a strong, not Sith, but you're strong, Red.
Are you Sith? No. Oh. Technicality. Okay.
Still good.
I told Snoke to bring back the Sith.
I think Sidious sees either a chance for revenge because he's still upset at Vader.
Yeah.
I see him as a vessel to come back.
I think literal possession is a possibility in my mind.
All right. You know, I messed up the first time. Let me try to do it again.
Yeah.
And I've got even a better specimen.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's... my knee-jerk reaction is that Sidious would see him as sloppy Vader. We're like, wow, you are...
Hashtag sloppy Vader.
Sloppy Vader.
Sloppy Joe, sloppy Vader.
Yeah, well, he just, like, there's been implications that, like, oh, well, the Force isn't spread around as much, and Kylo and Rey is the kind of the pillar of the dark and the light right now have this sort of, like, really raw, untamed power
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
maybe even more than Vader. So it'd be like, ooh, but that power is attractive,
mm-hmm.
but that Sidious understanding the dark side so well, you know, trained and molded Vader
mm-hmm.
and Anakin for years to make him this precise tool mm-hmm. that Sidious could wield. And here's this guy who's like, you have massive power, but like, I can't find your handle even. Like, you know,
yeah.
like you're such, not that, that if, you know, if Sidious was just alive, he could manipulate anybody. That's one of his
yeah.
best traits, mm-hmm. best mm-hmm. skills. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think you would just see him as sort of like, you're pathetic. You have all this power and
right.
you have no focus.
Mm.
You know.
Use my power.
I feel like he's another... this gets into my next question about
yeah.
how Kylo Ren is going to feel about Darth Sidious. So I'll just throw out there that I feel like there's going to be this fascinating, like, Sidious being like, you are a sad imitation of Vader. You have twice Vader's power and half the ability to use it. Mm. Like, you are pathetic. I'm going to possess your body, wipe you out.
Yeah.
Maybe, or just wipe you out. Whatever happens on a plot level. But I feel like Kylo Ren, that's why I can see Kylo and Rey teaming up. He's like, he slaughtered all of his father figures.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And here is the ultimate father figure. Mm-hmm. Like, if Kylo just wants to be like, I just want to feel like nobody can tell me what to do and I am in charge of everything. I don't even know what I want when I have it. I just want everything. I don't want anyone to tell me what to do. Man, is Sidious just like the ultimate big annoying father figure.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I mean, there's so much. I mean, does Kylo look at him and go, you know, I told my grandfather I was going to finish what he started, and apparently you're still around, so I'm taking you out too.
Yeah.
Going to your idea of Kylo doesn't want to be told what to do. Or is he like, oh, cool, finally someone who can help me? Because the First Order, and I still think the First Order factors a lot into what's going on.
Oh,
there's still the threat, and Hux and Finn, and I think there's something going on there, but I think it will come down to this. Because what is Sidious, if Sidious is sentient and a character and not just a holocron or an image or a vision, if he's there, like, what would he want? Galaxy domination of the galaxy again?
Yeah.
You know, taking over, haunted the entire galaxy, finishing what he started.
Yeah. I don't know how much room they'll get into telling this story, but with Darth Sidious, it's fascinating to me. Like, in more modern canon, they've made it more clear that he always kept the mask up to a certain extent. And, like, if he is just this, like, you know, angry spirit made, you know, corporeal again, that he's just like, nope, no masks, no lies, I just want to kill and control.
Yeah.
And just like this, you know,
even more evil, you know,
super evil.
The absolute epitome of the dark side, which I think is his function of this will be the ultimate victory for, you know, the Skywalker saga is to eliminate him once and for all.
Yeah.
Interesting. I would love to see a scene where Kylo Ren just reveres Darth Sidious.
Mm.
You know, he truly just, it's like meeting your idol, and then Sidious just crushes him. And we see that on Adam Driver's face of his dreams essentially being just demolished, and he's just whittled down, cut down by this person. What will that do to him? Will that make him so angry that he's going to prove him wrong and focus him, or is it going to make him want to jump ship and help Rey? I don't know. I just want to see Adam Driver in that moment because I think he was so brilliant.
That's a great point. Yeah, I could see random speculation, like a plot point of there is some sort of artifact that they're both after, because I feel like that's going to be the turning tide in the war, and Kylo Ren has the hubris to be like, I can control this, but he picks it up and it unleashes the Sidious and doesn't go well for Kylo.
Yeah, I like that. I like the idea that Kylo's like, finally, with Sidious, someone gets me.
Yeah.
And then he, take off that mask.
All right. Here we go, Grandpa. All right. Do you want the title, The Rise of Skywalker, to refer to Ben Solo, even partially? I can say on the ground in Star Wars Celebration, a lot of chit-chat went to that immediately. Mm-hmm. That's got to be the Skywalker that they're talking about. It's the blood Skywalker in the new generation. Mm-hmm. So, Jennifer, how do you feel? Do you want that title to be about Kylo totally, partially, not at all?
I like the idea of partially, but then it's got to be something, I would hope, positive, since this is like the end of the saga films.
Yeah.
So that would require a really serious act of redemption of him. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. What could he do that would spin that in the positive light of the rise of Skywalker?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Positive.
Mm. Yeah. Ken?
I think partially is a possibility. I got it on the day that the trailer, everyone, that means Kylo. It doesn't necessarily, and doesn't necessarily, should it mean it 100%. Partially, yes, Rey could have acted, the idea of, we talked about it last week, and that idea, Jen, that you kind of put out of this, you know, the rise of Skywalker in general, the name, the family, who's dead, and I love this idea of the First Order, and Kylo saying he's dead, the hero, he didn't save anything.
and then it's just the rise of the family name.
Yeah.
Spiritually, JJ just keeps saying it'll make sense, and that just makes me it's not what we would think it would be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the just my emotional reaction was the rise of Skywalker is Rey's taking up the mantle,
mm-hmm.
and we've seen her go through the challenge to do that, and it creates this question of like, Rey made herself a Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, you actually are a Skywalker. Can you live up to the name?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And to me, it kind of almost marries them together in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking a lot about the actual story of Vader. And part of the reason that it works so well in Return of the Jedi is because it is tied to Luke's story. So the reason Vader actually throwing Palpatine into the pit doesn't take anything away from Luke is because Luke's conflict in Return of the Jedi is his goal is to prove that there is still light,
mm-hmm.
to prove that optimism and connection and attachment is worthwhile. So when he gets through to Vader, that's Luke's victory.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there's definitely going to be some stuff that's going to be very hard to predict.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to tie Rey and Kylo's stories together so that even if Kylo, you know, is redeemed and destroys Palpatine, that it's also going to be part of Rey's journey and it's going to complete her story as well, you know, because I think she is positioned as the hero of this saga.
The legend.
Yeah, mm-hmm. the legend. Mm. So let's talk about the moment of redemption as we wrap up. If he is redeemed. If he does, Jennifer, as you discussed, pay some atonement, how do you want it to happen? What or who might be the catalyst?
I mean, obviously, like, the easy answer would be he sacrifices himself for Rey in some way. But I would like something more than that, where his sacrifice affects the galaxy, the everyday people in a way that he really is atoning for his sins in a humongous way that's going to change the galaxy for the better.
Ooh, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what specifically that would be.
Yeah, I mean, there's always the what and the how. And that's a great idea to feel like, you know, is there some sort of dark side explosion and it's going to destroy the galaxy and he absorbs it into himself. Like, you're just kind of spitballing of how you make that into an actual story point. But that's a really interesting idea of I'm not going to redeem myself. I'm going to save the galaxy.
Right.
It's a moment of atonement specifically rather than redemption.
I can get behind that. You know, he doesn't have to go on the desert planet. Mm. He can just sacrifice himself.
Yeah.
That would make me happy.
Okay.
Yeah, for me, it just comes down to simple, maybe because I have a simple mind, it's simple things. I just saving Rey, sacrificing Rey, something bigger, and I think there needs to be death in the way of it.
But emotionally, what do you want him to be responding to? We talk about Vader because it's our main example. Vader is responding to Luke.
Mm-hmm. I want it to be responding a little bit to Rey. And that her being a beacon of doing it right and him kind of realizing I did it wrong. And then also just, you know, maybe the little bit of a good of humanity and alienity together. But I do like the smaller, more intimate, specific feeling of Rey or just, you know, my family. Like,
yeah,
I did it wrong.
Mm.
You can do it right. Go on and do it right.
Yeah.
I'll help you get on that
path.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Yeah, when I was thinking about this, obviously I think Rey will be a part of it. But I really like the idea of, like, the clinching moment, the catalyst being legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And not just Skywalker, but Solo. Because they've played up so much that he is the son of Solo, that he has too much of Solo in him. And it would, you know, connect back to him making that kind of ultimate choice to kill Han.
Yeah.
And Luke's great line of, like, you know, I'll be with you always, just like your father. If there is some recognition of, like, I've been searching for my identity and I've been rejecting it all this time, it is an amazing gift to be a Skywalker and to be a Solo. And that if they could do it right, it would be just so powerful to me to have Kylo realize I should reaffirm the heroism and the sacrifice in the charm and wonder of these generations of heroes that I come from.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
How they do that? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Chewie brings him a little hollow that Han recorded. I don't know. We'll see. That's not going to happen.
Ben, if you're watching this, I'm dead.
Yeah.
You probably killed me.
Not going to happen and don't want it to happen. Spitballing. All right. So this is a deep and complex topic, and we will revisit it. We didn't even get into the whole Raylo of it, which we will discuss more in depth. But just to end on a light, fun question, if you could pick one word for Kylo to yell in episode 9, like traitor or liar, what one word would you like to hear Kylo Ren yell?
Jen?
No! If they can pull
that
off.
The old classic.
Oh, man. I mean, yeah. If they can pull that off, that'd be pretty
cool.
Great.
Wow.
Love that.
Yeah, it can.
I just want him to yell, sorry! Right at the end.
We are in sync. That was my response. Oh, like total wonderful, beautiful redemption. Like sorry.
Oh my god.
Sorry, I was evil for a little while, but what?
Dear God, a guy chose to be evil for a little bit, and now he's hated.
So, maybe there could be a subversion of the no, and he could have a huge yes.
Sure.
Just a nice fist pumping moment.
I want that
from Ben Solo.
It ends with yes.
All right, like I said, big complex topic. Lots of opinions out there. Feel free to share yours, and we will discuss it more as the rise of Skywalker approaches.
Absolutely, we got some audience questions we're going to get to here. Brian Cusick writes us and says, "Are there any scenes in any of the movies that are insignificant to the plot as a whole, but hold a place in your heart?" Brian says, "During the space battle of Endor, there's a shot that maybe a second long that I love. It's immediately after Lando tells the squadron to pull up when Admiral Ackbar addresses the fleet and says, take evasive action. Green group, stay close to holding sector MG7. Followed by a beautiful shot of the rebel fleet dispersing and the way the music swells. Oh man, I have chills just thinking about it. Totally random, and people will probably have to look up the scene for context, but I absolutely love it." So I just want to say this, Brian, to that scene. As a kid, I swore, my friend Joel Trudgeon, if you're out there listening, I swore one of the X-Wings hit the shield and exploded. I mean, we're talking for like 5 years. I was like, I swore in the theater I saw this. Like, Sinbad definitely was Shazam. Like, I swore. Me and my friend Joel were like, yeah, they must have cut it out. It's never happened. So I actually know exactly what you're talking about, Brian, because that scene, and I love little moments like that, Joseph.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. And not to be that guy, but just so we don't get 1,000 tweets, it's MV7, which I only remember because of endless trivia study.
That's true.
Anyway, Sector MV7.
Yep,
it is.
Yep.
It's hard to hear what he's saying there, old Ackbar. I love that shot. That's such a great shot for me. I think totally just flavor moments. I love the Porg looking into the lightsaber. Another one pounding the foot. And the other one that jumped to mind, I still remember people cheering in the theater. Tusken Raiders just shooting at the pod racers just to be a-holes.
Let me tell you something. I was there in 1999, too. Standing ovation applause level for
absolutely.
That scene.
Took out my favorite team toe.
Yes. Uh-huh. So don't tell me you hated the pod race. You were there cheering. I don't know.
On your feet.
I don't know who I'm talking to.
Oh, my gosh. Jen? Oh, my gosh. There's just this one moment in The Empire Strikes Back between Lando and Lobot where Lobot gives him this little signal and does this like sharp turn walks away. I love that. I laugh every time. No one else does. I love Wilro Hood.
Oh, yeah.
Which is now turned into this huge thing at Star Wars Celebration. The running of the hoods. Is that
Yeah.
So just a great moment that I remember watching that as a kid and going, yeah, that's Star Wars. But why does it look like something that's, you know, like from our world? Hey, that's what Star Wars is.
Man, there's so many of them. I'm almost drawing blanks in some little moments that are there's that moment in Rogue One where like, we got to turn that off. And the rebel soldier's like, I got it. And then get shot right away. So sad. But I'm like, yeah, that should happen sometimes in war. Around the same time, what Brian's talking about, I think I mentioned before, but I've loved since a kid. When the Battle of Endor's not going well, it hasn't turned yet, and that AT-ST destroys the tree, and the tree splinters.
Oh, yeah.
And then it does a hard cut into the space battle. I don't know why. It's insignificant to everything. Just love that moment.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Love it. All right, Will Gathright writes, do you think the time between The Last Jedi and Episode 9 is well-suited for a Clone Wars-style show to really flesh out the war, politics, state of the galaxy? Fair question. I think a lot of thoughts go to that, Jen. Do you want a Resistance TV show, a First Order TV show?
I don't know. I'm more about the lore than the wars.
Uh-huh.
But I'm sure it would be awesome. I'm sure it would be great. Maybe Dave Filoni could do that. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like for right now, resistance is going to grow into that, where we're going to see the this war through the perspective of this particular group of people. And then I think once 9 comes out and we get a better sense of what the war might, like, because we still don't know. Is it just that active war, kind of a smaller force, but, like, you know, a war? Or is it that, like, the First Order just totally controls the galaxy and the war is very small insurgency? You know, once I get the sense of what it's like, I think it would change my interest level of how many more, like, details I want to see about it.
I think it's six more, because I think Resistance is transitioning into that. Clearly, it makes sense. And then, we didn't get, Clone Wars 2008, 2005, so we can have some time. But I do like the idea in general. Well, I do like that idea. I'd like to take a couple questions from Patreon. We got Eric Goddett. He says, do you think the spinoffs may find new life on the Disney streaming service? I would love to see the continuation of Solo or an Obi-Wan miniseries on the new streaming service. So do you think that new life, Joseph?
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. I really would love Solo 2. I really want Obi-Wan. I do get a little concerned when I'm hearing about those particular things making it to Disney Plus, when there's such discussion of really getting into uncharted territory.
Yes.
And still talking to a lot of fans that just want new. And I really, really hope. I'll sign a petition. I really want Obi-Wan. I'd really love, you know, Kira versus Maul, Crimson Dawn, you know. Mm-hmm. I would love those things. Either is episodic things, or if Disney Plus gets in the business of making a lower budget movie.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Jen?
Yeah, I think that if Disney and Lucasfilm are smart and they want to have event TV, so to speak, like what we have with Game of Thrones, that's the way to do it, is to do an Obi-Wan miniseries and to release movies solely on the platform. They could, they would rival Netflix and every other streaming service like no one else. So I hope that they take that risk, because it might feel like a risk, but I think it would pay off.
I love everything you're all saying here. And Eric, I want Solo 2. Make it happen. We saw a lot of those t-shirts at the celebration.
So great.
The Obi-Wan miniseries, I have a little bit of faith. We'll see, but we don't know. And yeah, you're right. The push for new, I totally get love and respect. Don't anyone out there think otherwise. I'm always like, but there's still so much to learn about the things we love.
Yeah. but Ewan McGregor, and he's the right age. Now.
The time is now.
We can have both. Yeah, so I hope so. But we'll see. A lot of it hinges on Mandalorian. Yeah. Final thought of the day comes from Robin Nielsen. Robin writes, hello there. Hello there. What are your thoughts on John Boyega confirming at Celebration that Captain Phasma is dead, and is Star Wars the only franchise where a character can fall through a burning hole in a spaceship and have fans go, she's still alive? Thanks for all you do. Thank you, Robin, for writing. Joseph, is this definitive?
I don't think so. And I don't want to believe. How about put it that way? I'm the anti-Fox Mulder. I don't want to believe. I don't think Star Wars is unique. I think so many of the things that we love and are really popular right now come from that adventure serial genre, you know, thing. Somebody falling through fire, that's practically just a Tuesday. I mean, it's that way on Doctor Who. Game of Thrones, I don't want to spoil it, but the end of last season, massive castle destruction where...
Yeah.
All of our name characters get out just fine.
It
doesn't look like they should, in my opinion.
Yeah.
All superhero movies, death is not death. So, anyway.
Right.
So, for me, like, this is definitely in the genre where people come back to life. There's, like, 1% of me that thinks that could maybe be misdirection and she'll have a fun cameo in episode 9.
Sure.
Like, 1%.
Yeah.
But I just want her to... I want her to be the Darth Maul of the sequel trilogy. I want her to live on in... comics, you know, books, future Resistance cartoons. That would be great. I think she's a great character that it is never going to blossom in the movies.
Yeah. I think,
but I really want her to live.
I would love if that meant something. They can still keep things secret. It's tough these days, not just with set, but you know, IMDb pro credits and all. There's a lot of ways to confirm this stuff, but I'd love it if she popped back up. But I'm not thinking that would. I love what you say though. I mean, the Darth Maul, the series, about her story can be told elsewhere. There's already been a lot of other things, and it can make the character live in its own way.
Yeah,
Jen?
I only want Phasma back if they're going to let Gwendolyn Christie act without her mask, because after the Game of Thrones episode we saw last night, gosh dang it, she's an amazing actress. Yeah. I want to see her face. Absolutely. Give me that. Otherwise, yeah, she'll just have to be dead. Sorry.
I like it. That's our questions. We appreciate you reaching out. We'll tell you where to do that in a bit. Joseph, we are trying to build the Power of the Light Side segment. We're still getting some requests out on Patreon, right?
That's right. If you are a patron at the $10 or $20 level and you joined recently, check those inboxes on Patreon. We want to share your things you love about Star Wars right here on the show.
Absolutely. If you want to reach out and find us and join the conversation and ask us a question, you can do so on Twitter at ForceCenterPod. Use the hashtag ForceCenter. Like us on Facebook. We have a website, ForceCenterPod.podomatic.net. tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter is where our merch is sold. If you get them and have a picture, tweet us. Let us know. Tag us. We'll share it. Podcasts available several different spots, including Podomatic, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. We're on YouTube as well, where Animated Databank Brawl is featured prominently. We love Brian Ward's work, and we want you to check it out. Patreon.com/ForceCenter. Joseph, we've got some goals. We've hit some. It's been a busy time, but we're getting stuff ready.
Yeah. We're setting some times to do the watch-along of A New Hope that you all made possible, and we're getting very close to new theme music for Star Wars Ranked. So if you want to help us out, go to patreon.com/ForceCenter.
Absolutely. We got our own stuff going on. Jen?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Jennifer Landa, and be sure to subscribe to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/JenniferLanda, where I post craft videos, reaction videos, whatever kind of videos that I have time for.
Hopefully Snoke cupcake videos.
And Snoke cupcakes.
Joseph.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can find all sorts of other stuff on josephscrimshaw.com. That includes comedy albums, my book Comedy of Doom, all sorts of stuff, live shows on josephscrimshaw.com, and also the movie trivia Schmodown, the competition that I was in with Alex Damon live during Star Wars Celebration in front of 1,000 people. Ooh. That is up on the internet, so go check that out. Just go to Movie Trivia Schmodown's page on YouTube.
You will not see me on stage, but I am around the corner, hunched over a stairwell, nervous about every question that was asked.
Oh, my goodness.
So I had a part to do with that. So great event. Check that out. Go to catnapsack.com. New and improved. Got information where to pre-order my book, Why We Love Star Wars. Got my charity spotlight page back up and links to a lot of other things, including back to Force Center. It all feeds back into Star Wars. That's it for this week. Kylo, is he going to be redeemed? We'll find out in December of 2019, but still a lot more to figure out. We'll see you next time. That was Force Center.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.